This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. We've got your hosts, John Bonham, as always, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, we had kind of an interesting week last week when we were trying to record our episode, in case anybody was wondering where we were.
Yeah, very much lost in the annals of technical difficulty for sure. There was just one thing led to another, and if you guys ever heard the post, if that was a thing that happened, God, it would have been quite the episode to hear. But yeah, it's just nothing happened, and it's just time to leave some things buried. So sorry, guys, but we are back this week.
Yeah, we had the Vern joining us, and he was actually doing a recap of Suspiria. So I think he might actually mesh that into this episode somehow.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So the benefits of technology in 21st century. So maybe possibly be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, stay tuned. Mark, what's going on, man? Watch anything good this week?
It's been kind of a slow week for me. You know, it's just when everything gets dark, it kind of leaves you at work a little longer for whatever reason. And it's kind of harder to get to some things, and other things have put on the back burner. So I've only really saw The Grinch as far as recent movies go. I have a little bit to talk about that, but that's about it, man. How about yourself?
You know, I checked out the new Chris Pine movie on Netflix that was released on Friday.
Yeah,
it's called Outlaw King. It's about Robert the Bruce, taking place shortly after William Wallace was tortured and assassinated. I was kind of intrigued to, you know, to watch that, learn a little bit more about it. I'm a big Braveheart guy personally. Love the movie, so I was kind of curious to see how this would pan out. And unfortunately, the best way I could describe it is just being that a very poor man's Braveheart.
Yeah, I think founder David Dupree has kind of the same thoughts. I read a little bit of his article a couple of days ago in regards to it too, and he sounded kind of middling. So it sounds like you guys are more or less on the same wavelength there. So it doesn't seem like that's the thing that's going to get me to download or log into Netflix yet. So I haven't committed. One of these days I will, but that's not going to be the movie it sounds like to commit me yet.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately not. I was hoping it might be the one, but we'll get there one day.
That's right.
But let's go ahead and we'll jump into some real news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
And as you and I were saying before we hopped on here, not a ton. Had we actually recorded this yesterday, like we normally do, we might not have had anything. But unfortunately, the big piece of news that we have today is the passing of an icon and a legend in Stan Lee, who we all know from the Marvel series, you know, countless comic books dating back, 50, 60 years, maybe longer.
Yeah, he's been doing it for an extremely long time, and passed away at 95. So thoughts and prayers go out to his loved ones and the survived ones for sure. He's had quite the interesting career. I mean, if you think about it, there's been an entire generation. Like, I guess I could throw myself in there as a millennial who, you know, obviously I didn't grow up with the comics. He was still writing them when I was in the 90s. I was living in the 90s, but, you know, I wasn't really a huge comic book reader. So, you know, a lot of my exposure to Stan Lee came from, you know, watching that first Spider-Man. And I could be wrong. That might have been his first cameo in one of those movies, but maybe I'm forgetting something too. But it's kind of crazy how he's just, built an entire following just upon making these 6 to 10 second cameos in these movies.
Yeah, it was almost, you know, just one of the parts that everybody looked for in the movies. You know, you kind of get excited to see, you know, how what they're going to do, you know, to uniquely mix in Stan Lee. And I mean, now that you mention it, I don't know if it was Spider-Man, X-Men, or I don't know what year Eric Bana's Hulk came out. I feel like it might have
been. I think that was 2003, but it had to be one of those three movies because I feel like, you know, with Spider-Man, that was the whole, you know, essential start of the superhero boom. I mean, we had superhero movies before with Blade and stuff, but I don't recall him making a cameo in Blade. I want to say that started either in, you're right, X-Men or Spider-Man. I couldn't really see the Hulk, but I wouldn't be surprised either, but I had to put my money on one of those two.
Yeah, I of course, my internet's not cooperating right now. I was going to see what your X-Men came out in, but yeah.
2000.
It was 2000?
Yeah.
What year was Spider-Man?
Sam Raimi's? That was 2002, I want to say, the first one, yeah.
Okay, so I think Stan Lee had a cameo in X-Men. I feel like he was on the beach when that senator came out of the water.
Okay, I can't recall that far, so it's kind of crazy I'm able to recall some of these dates, but I can't recall if he was on the ocean or not, so you got me beat there. But yeah, I mean, it just goes without saying. I mean, he's built a massive following on, you know, on people like, you know, around you and I don't know how deep or integrated you are into comic book lore, but, you know, I might have read maybe 3 comic books my entire life, but I know Stan Lee just upon these, you know, 6 to 10 second cameos. And, you know, I know they've got the whole YouTube series or, you know, smash cuts of, well, he's essentially the same character throughout these entire movies and he just has amnesia. I forget what the theory is, but it's kind of crazy how it's taken a life of its own. So that's how I personally know him. I mean, I know he's a founder, but whenever I think of Stan Lee, the first thing I think of is not necessarily I know he created all the movies and created essentially the movies, but the first thing I think of is like, yeah, he did that cameo in the strip club with that.
No, absolutely the first thing I think of. But yeah, I mean, he's just an absolute creative genius. You know, he's the mastermind behind an empire that's worth billions of dollars. And I think one of the most interesting things that's overlooked is, you know, if you look at the plots of Avengers or Civil War or Infinity War, from what I get, and because I was never a big comic book guy, but from what I gather, just from some articles I've seen online, they stick pretty well to the comics that he wrote, which I find pretty interesting. At first I thought it maybe is just they took the idea or they took the name, like in James Bond, how a lot of them, you know, like the Pierce Brosnan movies don't really have a book basis behind it. But, you know, it seems like with his Marvel Avengers movies, they all stick pretty close to the source material, which I just find pretty impressive considering, you know, how long ago he probably wrote some of that stuff.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's something I never really thought of, but, you know, I think it just shows the staying power that he had, you know, in regards to creating really massively compelling stories where, you know, these studios felt like these are so great, we don't have to hew too much or, you know, get off the beaten path, which is pretty powerful. And I think another thing that gets a little underlooked at times is the fact that, like, he really, you know, made a lot of these guys like humans first, even if they weren't so, like, human-esque, he brought a lot of human characteristics to them. So yeah, you know, as we were saying, we were getting right into Stan Lee and like how, you know, he's obviously he's a legend, but you know, what he did was he really brought a lot of humanistic elements to a lot of his characters who you know, maybe weren't so like actual human. Maybe they came from, you know, outer space, but he made a lot of these stories like, you know, really, really basic. He grounded them. And I think that's right. Something that, you know, people forget a lot. I mean, I was just reading some stuff and yeah, I mean, he brought a real human element to a Spider-Man where, yeah, he's a teenager having troubles with girls or Captain America, you know, he's struggling with, you know, having these American ideals in this 21st century where nothing is as American as he grew up. So, I mean, he had a really good way of, you know, not so much just focusing on the action, but really trying to, you know, elevate the story.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a lot of, like, humanizing and really relatable characters that he made. And yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it's not going to be the same. And I guess I do wonder, like, how much input he had into – you know, like in Iron Man, for instance, you know, everybody loves Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. He's, you know, hilarious. a total, you know, sarcastic smartass and just hilarious. I don't know if that was, you know, directly from Stanley's interpretation of how the character should be or if that was mostly Robert Downey Jr., but I've got to imagine he probably had a pretty heavy influence on, you know, how a lot of these characters came out in the movies.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I'm sure he had a lot of say in, you know, how things went and, you know, the tones and how they're coming across, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a sad day. I mean, you know, absolutely amazing guy that created, you know, one of the, I mean, probably the biggest or second biggest franchise in movies today. So rest in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P.
And, you know, really the only other piece of news that we had was, and of course it's hard to follow up Stanley's passing, but I saw that Jacob Tremblay was the child star of Room, was cast as, actually I don't even know who he was cast as, but he was cast in the Shining sequel. You say it was Dr. Sleep?
That's what it's called, and I know really nothing about this book. I'm guessing, you know, it takes place relatively after The Shining, and I'm sure the characters who survived that movie probably appear in here at some point. But yeah, that's literally all I really know about this book or, you know, this sequel that they're planning on doing.
And I'm sure a lot of people are like, yeah, we know this. This was news over the summer, but I had no idea. So I just wanted to bring it up really quick because I was a little floored that they were making a sequel to The Shining of all movies.
I'm with you, man. I mean, I won't let you die on that hill alone. I had no idea that this was a thing. So, you know, The Shining, we talked about it on our Halloween pod. It's, you know, one of my favorite horror movies ever. So, you know, I don't know if this is necessarily going to make me read the book any, but I guess I'm interested. I'll give it a watch whenever it does come out. I think that's maybe 2020, so we're still a couple years away from that if it does come to fruition.
You know, on our Lost episode last week, we were talking about the Gladiator sequel, and, you know, it struck me as a movie that, you know, does not need a sequel, and I almost spoiled the original, and, you know, I really hope that that's not the case here, because The Shining is such a classic.
Yeah.
But the one saving grace that it does have is it's got director Mike Flanagan at the helm, who just released The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix, which I loved. I thought it was, you know, like mystery horror storytelling at its finest.
Okay.
So in that regard, I've got a little bit of excitement. I also like Ewan McGregor. He'll be the star as a grown-up Danny Torrance. So, I mean, it's got potential. I will say, I read a real quick like blurb about the gist of the book. And it was weird.
Okay. All right. So, God, I mean, you know, Stephen King and weird, you know, that's very broad, but you got me colored. If you say it's weird and, you know, that's what Stephen King has kind of worked with, then I'm all ears. You know, I'd say he's probably one of the few authors whose books, you know, consistently translate to, I'd say, pretty good silver screen treatment. I mean, you had like The Dark Tower, but I think they tried to do too much of that movie, throw in everything in like 90 minutes, and it didn't really work that much. But you've got your It's, you know, you've got your your Pet Cemetery is getting a remake for that. You've got some really good stuff that he's done, obviously The Shining. So, you know, a lot of his stuff does seem like it gets really good treatment. So I'm banking on this probably being, you know, at least pretty good, pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, now that you mentioned that, you know, he did, I believe he did Carrie, which, you know, there's the original Sissy Spacek. They did a remake of that. Great example with It, which was a monster, you know, re-release. Got to imagine there's going to be a, you know, silver bullet coming out in the next few years. I'm sure Pet Sematary will do pretty well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got like a plethora of just stuff to build off of, and even some of his smaller stuff like 1408. I mean, those things have following. So, I mean, he's had a really good, you know, output as far as, you know, his stuff getting translated fairly well to like, you know, the silver screen.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, I mean, he knows what he's doing. So we'll see how it comes out.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up the real news, and let's take a quick break for a few minutes to hear about some friend podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
will return after these announcements.
Hi, this is Tony, the host of the Flicks X-Rayed podcast. Each week, I am joined by guests.
Meow.
Hello.
Yo.
Why, hello there.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a roundtable discussion where we dig deep in X-Ray, a bunch of our favorite films, and some really terrible ones, too. We really like to go back and take a look at films that may be forgotten, maybe in the past, and still lovable films. If you want, you can follow us on all the major platforms, iTunes, Google, Stitcher.
If you want to find out more, you can find us online at www.flixxray.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to reach out to us. Good night, Internet.
Warning, the following promo contains strong language and 90s movies some may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
Do you remember the films of the 90s? The cinematic classics that changed movie history forever. The films that created treasured memories to last a lifetime.
Who in the right minds is this fucking film aimed at?
The Video Negative Podcast remembers things differently.
Fucking dire.
My God.
Absolute idiot.
Ah, they couldn't even get the fucking colours right.
Fucking atrocious.
We're a film review podcast that looks at the worst cinematic atrocities of the 90s.
Just end it. Just end it.
It's just woeful.
There's no clear...
This doesn't even have the pretense of wanting to be a good movie.
From the biggest blockbusters to the smallest indie flicks, it's all shit and it's all game.
This isn't preteen crap.
Criminally poor.
Fucking awful.
The film is a Panic at the Disco music video on loop.
Video Negative Podcast. The film review show that criticizes the chronic, disses the dismal, and puts the pathetic out to pasture.
I am not wasting any more of my oxygen on this film.
Check us out on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes, and hit us up on Twitter at Video Negative.
Hello everybody, it's me, The Vern, just jumping on here really quickly to apologize for the mess up in not posting an episode of the Cinema Recap last week. There was technical problems and it's just lost, alright? And on that episode, I was going to talk about Suspiria, the new Luca Guadagnino flick, but I realize if I'm going to do that now, it's going to take too much time. So here's what we're going to do, folks. On the next episode of Cinema Recall, I will be joined by guest Matthew Stewart of the Simplistic Reviews podcast, and both him and I will discuss both the original 1977 version of Suspiria, directed by Dario Argento, and then we'll discuss the 2018 version, directed by Luca Guadagnino. So definitely check that out. That'll be posted, I would believe, sometime later next week or so. All right. But thanks for all for listening. And now back to Cinema Recap.
All right. And we are back with Cinema Recap. Mark, any surprises in the top five this week for you?
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
You know, John, I really can't say there's a ton of surprises. You and I were both pretty much on the mark as far as what would finish number one. So I think we had it fairly well on the nose. We're actually pretty close as far as the actual result and where we both stood. So I'm not going to, I already know, you know, who won and who lost, but no real surprises to be honest. So I guess we should hop right into it.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to start at the sixth spot just because there was a new release right there, but Girl in the Spider's Web, A New Dragon Tattoo Story. Pretty poor opening, I would think, with 7.8 million. I don't know what David Fincher's open to with Rooney Mara and Daniel Craig starring, but I got to imagine it was like 30 million plus.
So. I think you're there. I think you're almost right on it. I mean, I don't know for example either, but I'm trying to run through some stats really fast, but yeah, I can't find them, but that is a pretty, you know, dreadful opening there. If they have any, you know, plans on, you know, going deeper into the catalog, this can't be encouraging.
No, that's a terrible sign. Budget of $43 million. I doubt that they make that back. You throw the marketing costs on top of that, and they're probably looking at a pretty big loss here. And
right,
you know, I thought the marketing was just not good at all. You know, we talked about the trailers. It seemed like they really showed you the entire movie and all the twists in the trailer. So, you know, why spend $15 and 2 hours of your time when you already know it's going to happen in the movie?
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you there. You know, and I saw and I read Vern's review, because he was the one to tackle this, and it sounded like he was more or less lukewarm too. So unfortunately, you know, with all the other stuff that's coming out and getting into Oscar season, this isn't something where if I get to it, maybe, but it's not something that's immediately like on the forefront of my mind, sadly.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get to this one unless my girlfriend makes me watch it. Which is quite possible that it'll happen. So we'll see about that. But
sure.
But yeah, still holding down the spot in the top five is A Star Is Born. We've talked a lot about this one. It's been there forever now. It brought in $8.1 million. I think it was released the same weekend as Venom. And I mean, Venom's in the eighth spot now. So, you know, really strong from A Star Is Born. Probably its last week in the top five, which I've enjoyed having it there. It kind of, you know, caught me a little off guard, probably being one of my top five, maybe top three favorite movies of the year. So,
yeah,
just $178 million total gross now. It's just been killing it.
Not much more to add, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I talk about it every week, but I just can't help myself.
Sure.
In the number four spot, we've got the very, very disappointing The Nutcracker and the Four Realms with $10 million. And you actually reviewed this one last week on our Lost episode. So do you want to touch on this one a little bit?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So, you know, I think you and I both didn't really have a ton of excitement for this. I'd probably seen one or two trailers for it. You know, stars Mackenzie Foy as essentially the princess. And it takes a little bit of like Harry Potter with, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia, and obviously the Nutcracker builds off of that base story and, you know, does a little bit different with it. So it's not exactly a carbon copy, which is fine. But the real problem I have with this movie is just everything just felt really, really digitized, very CGI, to the point where, you know, I couldn't buy anything as to what was happening within the movie. There were no stakes. Essentially, there's nothing to really ground myself into, you know, what was going on, or, you know, having any interest in this particular character, because, you know, I'd say 70-80% of the movie just seems like it's them walking across a green screen trying to interact with stuff that isn't really there. And it's kind of awkward. It really doesn't make, I don't want to say it doesn't make sense, but, you know, again, it's just a level of it's impossible to buy into what I'm watching on screen here. And I understand it's a fantasy, but, you know, when we've seen kind of really good CGI heavy movies like The Jungle Book, for example,
right.
I think at this point in time, that's probably the peak of what Disney's live action has done at this point, for them to kind of do this, where the quality at best is mediocre. It's not a good sign. It's not a fun watch. You know, you do have Keira Knightley in it. She plays like the Sugar Plum Fairy. And she goes for it. She's very over the top. But it's a very odd performance, especially as you get into the final act where it turns oddly sexual for a PG-rated movie. I mean, there are some things that she'll say in here. It's very the innuendo is very heavy. And it's just like, if I was taking my kids here, I don't know if it's something I really want them to hear, that type of stuff. You know, Mackenzie Foy is fine. I thought she was amazing and Interstellar, she really brought that emotional tangent to the movie when, you know, Cooper, Matthew McConaughey character, is getting ready to go up into space. And, you know, you really get the feel from her, like, I might never see my father again. I thought it was a very powerful performance, and I don't know how much time she was on screen, 15 minutes. But, you know, I was interested to see more in her, but she just doesn't have a lot to work off of here. The chemistry is okay with the Nutcracker she plays with, but, yeah, you know, I think I've said pretty much everything I needed to be said. And you know, like $10 million this week had a pretty significant drop of 50.4. So people flock to the other Christmas movie. It seems like this one's going to drop pretty fast. And I guess my last point here is I think we might need to be a little bit worried about Disney and the live action, you know, approach, because you, for every Jungle Book and Cinderella, you can maybe throw in, I'm forgetting one here, Beauty and the Beast. Like those, the latter two were fine, not great, but they're fine. Jungle Book was awesome, but they've had a lot more strikes and whiffs than I think people realize. Like you've got Wrinkle in Time. Now you've got the Nutcracker. The BFG was okay. Like you've got stuff here where it's, they're coming out with three of these next year. You know, with the track record that they have had in the last couple of years, there's really strong chance that one of those movies, Dumbo, Aladdin, or The Lion King, could be really bad just from what we've seen over the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, between those three, I can guess which one it's going to be.
You know, you say that. I'm not sold on Aladdin. I think out of the three, The Lion King probably has the best chance to be really good to great. But, you know, for targeting Dumbo, we're targeting, you know, Aladdin. I wasn't sold on the first trailer of Aladdin. I might need to see a little more before I get excited. So I'm going to go, and it's early, but I'm going to go and say Aladdin is the one that disappoints, but we'll see.
I think Aladdin is going to be, it's going to be a make or break based on what Will Smith's genie looks like.
I didn't think about that, but that's a good way of looking at it.
If it looks like ridiculous and just terrible, I'm going to be out on the movie from the get-go. So I'm really, really curious to see what Guy Ritchie does with that.
I see.
But so yeah, Nutcracker, total bomb, not doing too much this week. New release, Overlord, came in at $10.2 million. You know, I would have liked to see it open a little stronger. I think it, you know, had enough quality to it to do so. This was one that I reviewed this week. And I will get into an extreme amount of detail, but the one thing that I think I really kind of harped on in my review was just how I was so... I guess I just really enjoyed how they were like three distinct acts with totally different tones to them. Starts off as, you know, a war movie. These guys are paratrooping in to, you know, complete a mission of destroying a radio tower in Nazi-occupied France. Plane goes down, you know, just a complete war movie. You know, they're going behind enemy lines. They're holed up, you know, in a French house, getting their, you know, plan of attack ready to go. The middle act of the movie is all kind of like a mystery horror type film. Once one of the soldiers uncovers the, you know, experiments that a mad German scientist is completing on the local townsfolk, and you see these, you know, crazy mutilated people, and there's, you know, the serum that's making them superhuman. And then the end of the movie is just like pure shoot 'em up action, just, you know, ton of gunfire. There's like some crazy zombie fights, and all together, it just mixed to be a ton of fun. You know, there weren't really any points in the movie where I was bored. I was intrigued the entire time. I certainly jumped out of my shoes like on multiple occasions. So, you know, the acting wasn't spectacular by any stretch, but, I think you and I went in with the same mindset that we just wanted it to be a good time. And I think that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. I, fortunately was not able to get to this before we're recording, but, you know, yeah, I have the same mindset going in. Everything I've heard, you know, the best thought pieces of the movie kind of paint and say what you have said, where, you know, it is just a really good time. You know, it's violent, it's war heavy. You know, I guess it knows what it is. If you're going for acting, like I'm usually pretty good with the cast, but, you know, I don't think this movie makes its name on its cast. It makes its name on kind of just, you know, 1 hour and 50 minute, you know, thrill ride. Like you said, starting with that war focus, but then just, you know, devolving into like a full on action by the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really cool concept. And yeah, I mean, gosh, the cast, I couldn't have named one person. I recognized, you know, three people. Wyatt Russell,
yeah,
kind of the lead. I knew him from Everybody. Everybody Wants Some, I think.
Yep, he was in that. He was also in 22 Jump Street. So he's building the name a little bit as Kurt Russell's, you know, son. So I'm sure he'll continue to appear in more and more stuff. I guess my one main question here, since we've kind of talked a little bit about this movie in the past, how I think it was originated first to, you know, kind of be in that Cloverfield anthology type thing, you know, series, if you will. Are there any, like, you know, wink at the audiences, suggestions that maybe this has anything to do with that? Or is this like simply purely standalone? This is what it is.
Man, I think it's entirely standalone. It's been a while since I saw Cloverfield. Nothing stuck out to me as you know, connecting it to any of the other movies. Because it's like Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and then there's that weird Netflix, like, Cloverfield
Space. The Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah, which I think got
panned. Yeah, I remember being so hyped to watch that after, like, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it was about 30 minutes in. It had a pretty good start for 30 minutes in. I'm like, where's this going? And it wasn't good.
Yeah, so I don't think it was tied into those at all, and probably a good thing just based on the direction that those movies were going in.
Good point.
Wyatt Russell, that's Kurt Russell's son. Are you serious?
I mean, unless I might have said something too quick, but I'm pretty sure that's Kurt Russell's son. If you look at him, he kind of does have, I would say almost a spitting image.
Man, the similarities are there. I don't know how I missed that. I love Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, the product of those two starlets, yeah.
Wait a second. So he'd be, what's her face? Kate Hudson's brother.
Half sister? Yeah, I guess that's half sister. We're going on a different tangent here, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're son of Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn. I'll be damned. So there's your fun trivia fact for the day.
There you go.
But yeah, Overlord, it was a good time. I wish it would have opened a little bit stronger just based on that. Number two spot, we've got Bohemian Rhapsody coming in, I'd say, pretty strong with 31.2 million, only down about 40% from last week. I know I reviewed this one, and it was another part of our lost episode, but I personally didn't love it. I thought it was a decent enough, you know, movie, and it certainly fulfilled some of my curiosity about the backstory of Queen. But like I said, it was just a clash of, you know, almost like two different movies trying to fight for screen time. Part of that being the Freddie Mercury story. The other part of that being, you know, how Queen came to be, and it all comes together at their legendary Live Aid performance. Definitely some fun throughout, but overall, I think it needed to just be, you know, two different movies, because it just didn't focus hard enough on either one of those pieces.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about this, how it sounded like your thoughts more or less coalesced with a movie that came out a couple years ago, which was pretty much a biopic of James Brown, called Get On Up, starring Chadwick Boseman. I saw that movie and I kind of had some similar sentiments that you share with this movie. Unfortunately, this is another one I just haven't got around to seeing because I've sadly been kind of busy lately. But it sounds like there's no problem with the performance. You know, Rami Malek is pretty awesome. I know some people have, you know, qualms with his fake teeth, but it sounds like it's not a huge deal. And you brought the lip syncing too. Obviously he can't rock it like Freddie Mercury could, but who really can? It sounds like he's very, very convincing in his body movements and his physicality, sure, more or less. That doesn't seem like that's the issue, but it does seem like there's just not a lot of maybe cohesion is the word with the different type of stories that were, dual stories that they're trying to tell.
Yeah, to your point, Rami Malek, I think he crushed the stage presence part of it. I mean, I don't know a ton about Freddie Mercury, but I've got to imagine that's pretty much how he moved. Just because it seemed like, Malik took, it was very precise in everything that he did. So from that aspect, I mean, I thought he killed it. But overall, just, you know, I guess it wasn't really for me.
Yeah.
All right. And Mark, I know you reviewed the last one, so I'll let you take it away here.
Yeah. So coming in, that's just about almost 68 million is the Dr. Seuss, The Grinch. yet another retelling of the classic story of a green furried monster with a very small heart. I think it's like twice the size of a normal heart, and he just hates everything, and he so hates Christmas that he's going to devise a plan to steal it. Before I get any deeper, looks like you and I are tied now. You had said this would make about 670 million, and I said 60, so we were close. Yes. But you get the dub this time, because you were 3 million off, I was 7, so you pulled even. But
I needed to tie it up, man.
Yeah, I was on a roll for a little bit, but back to the Grinch. It's not the Nutcracker, so that's a good thing. It's a very kind of, I'd say, brief 84 minutes. When I say brief, though, there are still some times where the movie kind of drags a little bit. If you have ever seen, I think it's the 1966 version of Dr. Seuss's original, story. It occurred on TV, and it was about 26 to 30 minutes. It was very quick. It was very snappy. It had really good narration by Boris Karloff, who also did the voice of the Grinch. It didn't do any more than I think it needed to, but it's one of those, tenets of Christmas that a lot of people flock to, and, it still gets, played daily every year. It's kind of crazy doing a little bit of research. That came out same time almost as Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, as well as Frosty the Snowman. Like in a 5-year period, those three legendary pieces premiered on network television. So, these are things that people flock to, or people share with their kids, and their kids share with their kids. I mean, it's very generational. But with the movie, it's not bad. It's very kind of slapstick heavy. I went on a Saturday morning, so I saw a lot of families in there, and the kids seemed like they got a really good time out of it. The mom and dad seemed, fairly pleased. There are really two stories. You've got the Grinch's story that I've kind of talked about. They switched up a little bit to give him a little bit of character backstory that is a little bit touching. With the other character, it's Cindy Lou. She also existed in the other iterations of the Grinch. Her story, it definitely, they try to build something with her, but when it's not focused on the Grinch, it does, drag out the story a little bit, and it's just something that I personally did not care a whole bunch about. But that's just me. As far as the animation goes, it is good stuff. Illumination, I found, has always been really good with their animation, but when it comes to really delivering like a heartfelt story or something with a lot of meat, they fall short a lot when you compare them to like a Pixar, for example. Like I would never really put their movies on like, say, a level of a Wall-E or Inside Out. I think I could be forgetting something, but the strongest movie that comes to my mind that they've done is probably the first Despicable Me. And I've never been a huge fan of those movies. I think they're okay, but they've never been a huge fan of those. So the animation's good. The story is relatively quick, despite it dragging out a little bit. The crazy weak spot here is actually Benedict Cumberbatch.
Really?
Yeah, he's a great guy. He is an awesome thespian, amazing performances, Imitation Game. Obviously, he's one of Marvel's, I would say, linchpins now, backbones into this next, phase, or whatever you want to call it. But with him, I always thought he was kind of a curious choice to do an animated movie, just because when I kind of hear him, you can always change your voice a little bit, and make it more animated in an animated movie. But with him, like, I never really, felt like he was dynamic in regards to talking, to speaking. So, I could think of maybe 5-10 other people who I believe could be a better Grinch than he did. So with him, I would never really known as Benedict Cumberbatch, because with me, his voice isn't like that recognizable. I would have rather had someone who maybe brought a little more energy to the Grinch's character when it called for it. I will say, though, that everyone else is pretty good, especially Kenan Thompson. He is hilarious as one of the side characters in the movie. But that really boils it down. It's not a bad movie. It's definitely not an amazing movie. I think I graded out about 2.5 stars. It's not something where, it's going to build a lot of, tradition moving forward. I would still say families will probably flock to the original Grinch movie. No, they had the Jim Carrey one, which some people underrate. Some people, you know, say it's just very creepy. I don't know why they did the live action portion of it, but it's fine. It will make some pretty solid money, I'd say, throughout the rest of the month, because it is pretty much the only Christmas theme story we've got, unless that Mark Wahlberg movie is kind of Christmas heavy too.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
But yeah, that's my thoughts on the Grinch. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I read some. Well, I took like a quick glimpse at some of the ratings of it, and it definitely it opened strong, but from a review standpoint, I thought it would, as a lot of animated movies do, have pretty strong reviews, but you know, it looked pretty average across the board.
Yeah, and I say average is the best way to really paint this movie. No, nothing offensive at all. You know, it's just nothing I'm really going to remember or recommend to anyone. Miles of better Christmas movies, you know, even animated movies, animated specials that are going to be on very shortly here after Thanksgiving. So I would say if you don't feel like fleshing out $40 for a family, you can get the exact same experience in a couple weeks.
If you were to choose one person to play the Grinch, who would you pick?
Wow, one person to play the Grinch. That's putting me on the spot a little bit. I know this kind of goes counterintuitive to everything I've just said because he's kind of dry, but I kept on coming back to Jason Bateman. You know, he was really good as the Fox in Zootopia. I thought he added a lot. He was very sly. Jason Bateman's always had this really, dry delivery. I think, though, he could have done a lot with the Grinch. I've heard him be animated at times, so I would have loved to kind of hear his rendition on the character.
Oh, man, I love that answer. I feel like he's the perfect person for it, just with how sarcastic he is. And oh, man, that would have been a great fit.
Yeah.
Well, I put you on the spot and you delivered, Mark.
I try sometimes.
Alrighty, we'll start to wrap things up here with a quick run through of what we got coming out this week.
Coming soon to theaters.
We got a couple big ones. Let's really quick. You mentioned Instant Family, Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne, going to be kind of like one of those cute, sweet family movies. They adopt a few kids and think it's all about them coming together and learning how to become a family and love one another. So I'm sure it'll be, a movie that'll make the moms cry, but I don't have a ton of interest in that one.
Yeah, I kind of like Mark Wahlberg in some things. In other things, he feels like he's phoning it in a little bit. I think I've only seen one trailer for this, and I don't have a whole bunch of excitement for this. I'm sure it'll probably top out. Maybe number, I have to look at it again, but my gut says something like number 4.
Yeah, I would, it might do, decent just being so close to Thanksgiving, get some families going to check it out. But I'm not expecting big numbers from this one at all. I feel like 4 is probably 4 or 5 is probably accurate just based on what else is coming out. And we got probably, what I'm guessing is going to win the weekend is Fantastic Beasts, the Crimes of Grindelwald, another, sequel to the original, which was a Harry Potter spinoff series. And I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day, man. I'm pretty far removed from Harry Potter at this point, let alone something that isn't even actually Harry Potter. And it's just side characters that I have no, emotional tie to whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
The first movie was fine. It was entertaining. I didn't have any problem sitting through it. I'm sure I won't have any problem sitting through the next one. I'm kind of excited to see Jude Law as Dumbledore, I guess. But outside of that, I don't know. This is kind of white noise for me.
Yeah, I've never really been into the Harry Potter franchise, the books or the movies. So I'm probably the wrong guy to really give my assessment. And I'm not going to do that. The only thing that I'm probably going to focus on, you have to take this with a grain of salt, but there are already kind of pieces coming out, and it seems like this is probably going to be pretty middling. Currently, it's at 57% at the time of this recording. where, you know, it's obviously very half and half, more or less. So it doesn't seem like there's a whole bunch of excitement or, you know, this is that got a fever pitch. I remember the first one, it seemed like people were very intrigued with how they're going to, you know, spin off of the Harry Potter story. And it did pretty good numbers. And I believe, if I recall correctly, it was received pretty positive. But for whatever reason, you know, I've seen trailer upon trailer for this movie, and nothing has made me excited for it necessarily. But even some of the people who I feel like are Harry Potter diehards, it just feels like, huh, you know, this is, it's coming, I'll watch it, but it's just there. So my gut is, if it's already at 57%, it's probably going to drop a little more, and it might settle somewhere like around 45 to 51. I can't see this getting much higher, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to go, I do think it's going to win the weekend. I'm going to say 80 million, but I'm a little worried that I'm overshooting.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, bank on you overshooting, and I'm going to undershoot. So I'm going to say, I'm hearing more and more about, you know, this movie, how, you know, the demand maybe just isn't as strong as WB thinks it is. So I'm going to go and I'm going to say 60 million, still finishing number one, but I'm going to say 60 million.
Yeah, that feels like a safer number. I'm banking on just how big the Harry Potter franchise was, and there's probably some fans coming out of the woodwork, but if it opens to 50 or 60, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah.
And I mean, last but not least, this has to be the movie that we're both the most excited for, is Widows.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's already been covered by, you know, one of our colleagues there. So there are some thoughts already up on thatmomentin.com, but I'm pretty sure, yeah, you and I will most likely have this watch by the time we convene for next week's episode. I'm sure that will be the movie we really focus on. If we get to other things, I'm sure we will. But yeah, you and I, I'm pretty sure have been excited for this for a very long time. I've only seen one trailer. I don't go on my way to see trailers, but I've seen the first trailer. I think that's the only trailer, numerous times, and you know, I'm gripped each and every single time. I'm excited. I love Viola Davis. She's uber talented, but we talked about this numerous times as well. You know, he's assembled a very interesting cast where some people who I maybe would never have seen in like a Steve McQueen film, like a Michelle Rodriguez, like, you know, she's in it. I'm interested to see her. You know, you've got Colin Farrell, you've got Daniel Kaluuya. Some of these people, I'm sure, don't live as long as others because we know the general plot line, but it's a massive cast. And, you know, Steve McQueen, I'm very excited. I'm very interested to see how he follows up 12 Years a Slave. And by all accounts, it sounds like he's done an amazing job. We shall see if this is like the type of movie that does get the push Oscar wise, because it is a drama, it is a mystery, and it sounds like a little bit of thriller too. You usually don't see a lot of thrillers do well as far as award season goes, but maybe this is one that breaks the bank, especially if it focuses more like on the drama side of things.
Yeah, I think, you know, Steve McQueen being tied to it, automatically people are thinking Oscars in their minds. Yeah. I'm betting it's probably got a best supporting actor or actress in there somewhere. I'm really excited to see Daniel Kaluuya. I read a little bit that he's got a pretty strong performance and he plays a pretty solid antagonist. So can't wait to see that. God, am I supposed to review Fantastic Beasts?
I do think this is something that we did discuss. We did rock, paper, scissors for it. Not really, but... yeah, you know, if you can get to it, that would be, you know, pretty nice here. And I might bite the bullet if I got some time too. You know, I definitely want to see Widows, but if I got some time, maybe I'll try to catch Instant Family or something.
Yeah, we'll try to have it covered. I'll go for Fantastic Beasts on Thursday to make sure I get it in, and then hopefully catch Widows on like Saturday maybe.
Yeah, there you go. That's a smart way of looking at it.
But there we go. I know Green Book's getting released too, but it's limited, so I think we'll touch on that on maybe our next podcast.
Yeah, I still think it's a ways away from getting that full-on release, but I imagine by probably, I think the date I heard was, if this Friday's the 16th, probably the 30th. I can see that probably having a really deeper, wider release, if you will. But yeah, both of us have some really big expectations for that, just based upon the first trailer that we've seen. So yeah, once that comes, I'm sure both you and I will have some thoughts to break down on.
Absolutely. Alrighty, well, I think we'll wrap it up right there. We appreciate everybody tuning in this week, and we'll catch you next time on Cinema Recap.
Cool, guys. Take care. Peace.